Connected to Christ, Witnessing in Everyday Life is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June. It's written by Dr. Mark Wood, Director of Witness and Outreach for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Learn more about Connected to Christ at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, Connected to Christ, Witnessing in Everyday Life, issuesetc.org or 1-800-325-3040. We have discussed the issue a lot in the last several years here on Issues Etc. The transgender agenda has mostly been felt on two fronts. One is obviously the issue of privacy, and this has to do with whether or not girls in particular, but boys as well, can have a expectation of privacy in, say, a locker room or a bathroom in a school that allows transgender student to pass freely between the locker room or the bathrooms for either sex. The other is in sports. Now, are these just outliers? We have heard politicians recently say that they have not been hearing any great influx of complaints on either of those fronts, and therefore this may be a tempest in a teapot, and what is everyone so worried about? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to talk about the best argument against transgenderism. Josh Pauling joins us. He's a former high school history teacher, head elder at All Saints Lutheran Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, and author of a column for the Public Discourse titled "What Are Bodies For Beyond Bathrooms and Women's Sports?" Josh, welcome back.
Hey, good to be with you again. Hope you're doing well.
Doing well. You say that saving bathrooms and athletics really won't accomplish much in the long run if what it means to be embodied beings as male and female has already been forgotten. What do you mean by that?
Right. So if we think about so many of the recent transgender controversies, as you mentioned in the open there, most of them are over the bathroom or who gets to don the ladies' uniform, right? And to be sure, in a certain sense, the focus on sports and restrooms is important, and it's also understandable, since biology matters in both instances, and both of those things are actionable on the policy level. So I'm not saying those things aren't important. There's also something very visceral and elemental, maybe even primal, about those issues, because they're crossing lines of male-female distinction very blatantly. And there's almost sort of a repulsion in some people's mind to that. Right? So it's understandable why those issues are so prominent. But I wonder if this sort of last stand for bathrooms and sports fields doesn't really gain much, because it easily just comes across as the latest battle in the culture war, which frequently receives a roll of the eyes from many Americans. And really, there's no actual grounding or foundational explanation for why one would want to keep the bathroom or the sports field sex-specific anyway. The debate never goes further than that, why one would really want to have the sex-specific spaces to begin with. And so what that really got me thinking about is if we've already lost sort of an understanding or a grounding for what it means to be male and female, well, what's the point of keeping them separate anyway? So we need to really think through the purpose of our bodies, more so than just the bathroom or the sports field.
So why are arguments for privacy or fairness in competition easy targets for progressives?
Yeah, I've experienced this quite a bit with some of my friends and colleagues and so forth, and we have very, very wonderful discussions through the years over some of these things, and I've always enjoyed those. But a lot of times it's very easy for progressives to sort of shoot down these arguments as simply like a last stand of backwards bigots. That some of the questions that are frequently around there are things like, are there really hundreds of males lining up to transition just to get a competitive edge in sports? And also sometimes people might think, well, are you saying that transgender individuals are akin to peeping Toms, that they just want to get in the bathroom to look at other people's bodies? And so we need to be careful how we frame this, because if our focus is so exclusively on bathrooms and sports fields, it is sort of easy to dismiss, because unintentionally, I think sometimes we end up casting LGBT individuals as others. And that's not necessarily helpful or accurate, right? Every human being is made in God's image. And we need to speak the truth in a way that acknowledges this.
Why do most transgender controversies therefore end in a stalemate?
Yeah, so we usually end up sort of stuck with progressives and conservatives sort of in a war of wills over individual rights. And so progressives tend to prioritize what we might say would be the therapeutic rights of personal self-expression, or the attempt to avoid dignitary harm and implement what's called gender-affirming care. So that seems to be the focus of progressives, the rights of those individuals who would be considered to be sort of a marginalized sexuality. Conservatives, on the other hand, tend to prioritize the legal rights of biologically male and female majorities in those sex-specific spaces, and also the religious rights of those who conscientiously object to gender ideology. And so really, then, it just becomes a matter of who has the power, right? Political or cultural or otherwise. And it turns into sort of a my rights versus their rights dynamic, which no one really ever wins.
What is the, you call it the irrational animus accusation of progressives against conservatives, and why does it often stick?
Right. So one of the things that happens in these discussions is that conservatives, because they're focusing on the sort of my rights versus their rights, it becomes this idea, it's called an irrational animus. And this is actually a term that's been used for quite some time, and it's played a central role, at least in some way, in Supreme Court rulings on LGBT issues since 1996 in Romer versus Evans. And the concept could be described as this. This was the words of Nathaniel Frank in an article in The Atlantic in 2014 during the same-sex marriage debates. He said this: states are struggling to find logical explanations for anti-gay laws, and it's clearer than ever that bias and not reason is the motivating force behind them. So to Frank and many others, the only plausible conclusion is that these arguments against whether it's same-sex marriage or LGBT issues or transgenders in sports or whatever it might be, that the only reason for that argument is irrational bias. So it's the idea that the only reason one can be against something in the sexual revolution is because, well, they're just bigoted. They have some animus, some bias, or some prejudice. And this came through loud and clear in the Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on the Equality Act in Senator Dick Durbin's closing remarks, where he basically presented that same idea, that the only reason somebody might be opposed to this is because of an animus, a bias. And I could quote that if you'd like.
Please, what did Senator Durbin have to say?
He said this, first about the issue of bathrooms in women's sports. He sort of downplayed it when he said this, quote, "We are waiting for this avalanche of problems, but they haven't really surfaced." And then he said later in relation to religious liberty and really being a cover for discrimination, he said this, quote, "I do believe that people who want to blatantly discriminate and use religion as their weapon have gone too far. We have to have limits on what they can do." And then he said this, "I might remind us in history that the Ku Klux Klan was not burning question marks. They were burning a cross. They were making some distorted connection with religion. And God forbid that anybody would buy that. We don't need that in America, regardless of the time, regardless of the organization, wherever they come down on the political spectrum," end quote. Right, so we see here that this comparison to racism, and that the only reason some might be opposed to, someone might be opposed to transgender issues would be because of some sort of discrimination they harbor in their hearts.
Strikes me that is precisely the same argument made by one of the writers for the majority in the Obergefell case that nationalized same-sex marriage.
Indeed, indeed, yes.
So let's deal with something that isn't often dealt with, and that is the core issues of transgenderism, how the transgenderism arrives at its mind-body distinction.
Right, yes. And this is where I think we never really get much of a chance to have the debate. And I think in this area, Christians really have the better argument. So we need to know these arguments so we can know what to say, right? And it's not just about sports fields and bathrooms, but there's something bigger. And so I would say one of the biggest things with transgenderism is that it's really an outworking of mind-body dualism that is so pervasive in modern thinking. And this is something that I think two scholars especially have done a really good job of recently exposing, and that would be Nancy Piercy and Carl Truman. They've written recently, Nancy Piercy wrote Love Thy Body in 2019, where she really tackles this idea of mind-body dualism and the problems it creates. And then more recently, Carl Truman with The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self, that's part of his argument as well. And so mind-body dualism basically pits the mind and the body sort of against each other, and that the body is extrinsic to the person, and that the autonomous self can impose its own interpretations on the physical body. And so we could see in transgenderism, really, that's exactly what's happening. We have a two-tiered view of human beings, where the human person is defined as the authentic self constituted in the mind, while the body is relegated to a secondary position with no intrinsic meaning.
So should we ask questions like, and I think I even might be cribbing this question from Carl Truman, why is the mind right when it comes to my gender and my body wrong?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. We do need to ask those questions. Why all of a sudden are we going with the mind being right and the body being wrong, rather than our actual physical reality being right, and maybe working on the mind to align with the body? Now, I think we do need to be fair and honest and compassionate, right, and recognize that there are real issues and challenges for individuals who don't have a clear alignment in the way they feel about themselves and their actual biological reality, right? So we're not dismissing the fact that there are individuals who struggle with alignment between the two. It's really rather a question of what is the best solution. And what we see really changing before our eyes in this debate is really science is on our side, but many of the activists amongst the LGBT voices are really sort of twisting the science to try to be on their side. And this is very dangerous. Actually, after writing this article, there was a response to it on an LGBTQ site, and that was one of their points, that no, science is on our side, and this is not a scientific argument that I was making. And so we need to really watch this carefully and see what's happening in this regard.
Why does the mind-body dualism of transgenderism, why does it not add up, as you say?
Yeah, so if my gender identity is independent of my biological sex, okay, well then it's something separate, it's something in my mind. Well then why should I have to change my biology or attempt to change my biology so quickly medically, right? Why would we do that? If my gender identity is really so free and unbounded, why then do I have to all of a sudden look like an old gender stereotype of one side or the other, right? If a girl likes rough and tumble games and hopes to work with her hands, why all of a sudden do we think she really is a boy? Or on the flip side, why would she have to change her appearance to look like a boy based on gender stereotypes if the stereotypes are based on a faulty binary, right? I think a great example of this was Bruce Jenner years back, right? When he came out with Call Me Caitlin, why did the big photo shoot have to look like a pinup model session, which perpetuated the further objectification of women? It really, for a movement that claims to move beyond the binary, it really seems also to double down on gender stereotypes.
Josh Pauling is our guest. We'll find out why transgenderism so often does double down on gender stereotypes on the other side of the break. We're talking about the best argument against transgenderism. Josh is author of a column for the Public Discourse titled, What Are Bodies For? Beyond Bathrooms and Women's Sports. Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by becoming a congregational sponsor. When your church pledges $1,000, we'll publicize your congregation on the podcast, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Learn more on the support donate page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline. Become an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor.
I'm Chaplain Sean Denzer, Director of Worship for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Congregations work hard to keep the Word of Christ dwelling richly in His disciples now and into eternal life. We work to help and support that effort. Learn more at lcms.org/worship. You'll find resources on the church year, Bible studies on the hymns of the day, audio helps for learning to sing our services, and look for worship planning resources to find the latest from LCMS worship. That's lcms.org/worship. May the Word of Christ dwell richly in you.
St. Paul Lutheran School of Hamel, Illinois is the only classical Lutheran school in Greater St. Louis. We're looking for a first and second grade teacher for the 2021-2022 school year. We pay 100% salary scale for the Southern Illinois District of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Other benefits include full health care coverage, retirement and disability, and continuing education assistance. For more information, email jeff@issuesetc.org. jeff@issuesetc.org.
This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago, with a message for parents, grandparents, and godparents of college-bound children. Concordia Chicago is a distinctive, comprehensive university of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We're devoted to our Lutheran confession and committed to strong academics. Please encourage your child, grandchild, or godchild to check out Concordia University Chicago at cuchicago.edu.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by becoming an Issues Etc. congregational sponsor. Augustana Lutheran, Moscow, Idaho. Divine Savior Lutheran, Divine, Texas. Grace Lutheran, Columbus, Indiana. Emmanuel Lutheran, Eagle, Nebraska. Messiah Lutheran, Seattle, Washington. Our Savior Lutheran, Winchester, Virginia. Redeemer Lutheran, Nashville, Tennessee. St. John Lutheran, Ray, Michigan. St. Paul Lutheran, Munster, Indiana. And Trinity Lutheran, Scarsdale, New York. Find out how your confessional Lutheran church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Support, Donate, and print the one-page flyer. When your congregation becomes an Issues Etc. sponsor, we'll publicize your church on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. Hey, belated happy birthday, 82nd birthday that is, to the Coast Guard Auxiliary. The Coast Guard Auxiliary traces its history to June 23rd, 1939, when Congress authorized civilians to promote safety on the high seas and navigable waters. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces supports almost 200 chaplains, including four Coast Guard Auxiliary chaplains. Find out more about their work at lcms.org/armed forces, serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces, lcms.org/armed forces. We're talking about the best argument against transgenderism. Josh Pauling is our guest. He's author of a column for the Public Discourse titled, What Are Bodies For? Beyond Bathrooms and Women's Sports. Before the break, you had mentioned that transgenderism often doubles down on gender stereotypes while denying the sexual binary. Why is that?
I think it's because gender is viewed as performative, as a performance. And if gender is just an act we perform, then we'd better perform it properly, in an overtly male or female way, to sort of prove that we are this gender or that gender.
You talk about gendered embodiment. What is that?
That our gender is manifest in our bodies. That our bodies, being male or female, that influences how we experience life in the world. And in the 1990s, there were some feminist scholars that were exploring what might be a similar idea. They called it sexed corporeality. Right, that our corporal, our physical bodies were sexed, right? And that was central to our identity. And that men and women with their different sexed bodies have very different experiences of the world, right? And that impacts everything. More recently, we've been learning a lot about what scientists have called embodied cognition. And there's some controversy here, but very similarly, I think there's something to offer here. Embodied cognition suggests that the body's unique features play a central role in how we come to know and experience ourselves in the world. So what I mean by gendered embodiment is that our maleness and femaleness are not acts we perform, but they are our very bodily essence. And that being man or woman is not simply what one does, it is who one is. And this is very freeing and empowering, because it really releases men and women from unhealthy and unrealistic gender stereotypes, past or present, right? So being male or female isn't about being, you know, an overt male or female. It's about being ontologically male or female, that it is our real identity. So this isn't about boys liking blue and girls liking pink. It's also not about reviving the 1950s or the 1850s or some other so-called but not so golden era. Men, whether they like flowers or towers, are really ontologically men. And men can live out their bodies' purposes as men as those who are strong enough to self-give, sacrifice, and provide. Women, whether they lift weights or plates, are really truly women, and they can embrace their body's inherent generative potency as the closest things to divine creators on the planet. Right. So the answers aren't found in trying to bend the body to align with the mind, but in embracing the givenness of our biological bodies.
So this really is an attempt to draw together again both mind and body, not to set them in that dualistic relationship, especially with regard to transgenderism, making the mind superior to the body with regard to its ability to indicate truth.
Correct. Yes. We are whole beings, right? And again, Christianity is so beautiful with this. We are embodied spirits, right? We are mind, body, and spirit all in one. And what beautiful picture we have of that in Christ, who takes on flesh and still will always have his resurrected, glorified body, right? Yes, indeed. That's exactly right.
You say unbounded sexual and gender choice sounds freeing, but it provides no framework for meaningful action in the world. What do you mean?
Right. So it does sound sort of attractive to so many people, especially in a culture that believes in autonomy so strongly, right? That we should be completely free, completely autonomous to do whatever we want, to define our meaning, to define our purpose, to define our destiny, to go change the world, right? Whatever it might be. This idea of sort of creating your own identity sexually or gender-wise is attractive. But it really deconstructs too much because it gets rid of the most foundational schema for understanding reality, and that is male and female. It removes the most basic tool we have for navigating the world and our role in it and with one another.
You say that gendered embodiment, as you've described it there, is a far more compelling truth than the transgender lie. How so?
Well, I think for two reasons. One, it perfectly connects a philosophy of the body with science, right? The science really is on the Christian side here. We know that we are biologically male or female, right? That every cell in our body is as such male or female. There's so many things about our bodies that are sexed, right? That are different. Even when an archaeologist looks at bones in the ground, they look for different things to determine if that skeleton is male or female, right? So even if we try to change our external appearance, scientifically, biologically, we are still male or female. So combining the science with this philosophy of the body and gendered embodiment puts it all together beautifully. I think it's also more compelling because it has a destiny. Our bodies then have a telos, a purpose, and we can find meaning in living out the purpose of our bodies as male and female in the context of our relationships with one another, and ultimately, most clearly, in the male-female relationship that is consummated in holy matrimony. Right, this familial telos, this union with one another that is so beautifully pictured in marriage and also with Christ and the church. We have this richer, original diversity of male and female, and that is truly liberating, beautiful, and even erotic in the right context, right? There's awe and mystery in this exploration of the original other, right? So if we want diversity, well, we've got it originally, male and female, right? There's an original diversity within the human species. And we don't experience the other sex by trying to modify our bodies, transgenderism, or acting out opposite gender norms. It's actually found in meaningful relationships of care and love with one another. And again, most clearly in the one flesh union of holy matrimony. We can really do more than just say no to gender ideology. We have a compelling view of the world that combines science and philosophy together in a very persuasive way.
Finally, then, how would this change the way that we approach people who genuinely are gender dysphoric, who experience that disconnect between their body and their mind?
Right. I think for one, it helps us not treat them as an other, right? Not somebody who's somehow outside, beyond the pale. It's an individual who has a real struggle, a deep struggle internally, right? And that the answer is found in helping them embrace their biology. Now, that may be difficult, and it may never perfectly align, right? But the answer is not found in going with the mind and moving forward with trying to change the body to align with the mind. And I think over time, that truth will come out. In some parts of the world, in Britain especially, we've seen some cases come forward where people who were transitioned early are now trying to essentially make that wrong right in the courts and so forth. And that's very challenging. Kira Bell is one example of that. So I think over time we will be proven right, but we need to have the arguments to make that case now, because it will be a long time if we don't make that case.
Josh Poling is a former high school history teacher, head elder at All Saints Lutheran Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's author of a column for Public Discourse titled What Are Bodies For? Beyond Bathrooms and Women's Sports. Read it for yourself on the Talk On Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Josh, thank you very much.
Thanks, Todd.
Pastor Roy Eskins will be with us on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about a pastor's responsibility. In fact, not just a responsibility, but a burden. And we'll begin with something that sends chills down his spine. Some of God's words in Ezekiel 3.
Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas is now enrolling for the coming school year. What makes us unique? A confessional Lutheran school offering a classical education for preschool through the 12th grades. Faith Lutheran School features rigorous classes that incorporate a focus on wisdom, truth, virtue, and the historic Christian faith. Live online classes are also available for high school students worldwide. To learn more about Faith Lutheran School or to submit an application, visit flsplano.org. That's flsplano.org.
Connected to Christ, Witnessing in Everyday Life is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June. It's written by Dr. Mark Wood, Director of Witness and Outreach for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Learn more about Connected to Christ at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for June, Connected to Christ, Witnessing in Everyday Life, issuesetc.org or 1-800-325-3040.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When it comes to serving their neighborhood, what could two churches 2,400 miles apart have in common? Both Grace Lutheran Church in Blaine, Washington, and Christ the King in Memphis, Tennessee, are confronting homelessness in amazing ways. Their stories are inspiring and make you want to join in with them. Hello, my name is Rahema Kavuga of Lutheran Church Extension Fund, and I'm inviting you to check out these stories and more at interesttime.org. Great things are happening coast to coast, and you can be a part of it. That's interesttime.org.
Confessional Lutherans are invited to rent a four-bedroom, three-bathroom Table Rock lakefront home in the Ozarks. Table Rock Lake is a premier lake in the heart of the Ozarks for boating, water sports, and fishing. This log cabin-style rental sleeps 12 and is 30 minutes from Branson and 20 minutes from Silver Dollar City. Learn more by calling Swanson Estates 713-855-2681. Be sure to mention Issues Etc. 713-855-2681.